There's a good ball played in for Tony Morley. Oh, he missed it! And it is! Peter Will!
Welcome, everyone, to From Witten to Rotterdam, an Astonville podcast. We're your hosts. My name is Eddie.
My name's Pascal.
Hi, and I'm James.
And today, we're delighted for our 20th episode to welcome Espen Strand of Oslo, Norway. Espen, how are you today?
I'm fine. It's cold here, but it's fine.
Well, we're happy to have you on, especially for today, such a sort of milestone episode for ourselves. Yeah. You know, while it's a milestone episode, we're excited to be doing this for as long as we have this season. It wasn't necessarily a milestone week for Aston Villa, so I think we can get right into the game recaps. On Saturday, Aston Villa 0, Brighton Hove Albion 0. Not exactly the most exciting game, especially for the neutral, but I'd say as Villa fans, I think the only thing we could really come away with that one was, a good sense of relief, especially given everything that's happening. So, you know, going up to the game, though, I don't think we were all this, I'd say not negative is the term, but I would say worried. I think Pascal was the only one last week who didn't predict a win. So I'll start with you, Pascal, actually. Heading into the game, pregame thoughts, you know, Brighton, they've had some sputtering form, but they've come into a little bit in the last few weeks. What were you thinking going into this one?
I think after Man City, they're arguably the form team in the league, especially from like a defensive aspect. You know, their last five games, they've beat Liverpool, they beat Spurs. They've conceded one goal in like six games or something mental like that. And the Amex is just one of those places. It's just a difficult place to go. And I've watched Brighton quite a lot this season, and I don't think they deserve to be as low as they are in the table. They actually play some really good football. If they had like a goal scorer, I think they'd be pushing top half. So, yeah, I knew it'd be a tough game. So I didn't expect anything less, to be honest with you. I knew if we were to win, we'd really have to kind of work hard. Because I knew they'd pass us off the park, to be honest with you, because that's the kind of team they are. And credit to them, they did on the night.
Yeah, Espen, I'm going to go to you next. Heading into this one, I think a lot of Villa fans, especially on Twitter and stuff, were being incredibly positive. So I was wondering, if were you amongst that group, or you were feeling a little bit more apprehensive or reticent about this Brighton side?
Well, I was worried because what I've seen of Brighton this season, especially lately, they played the type of football we have struggled against, and that's with high pressure and amazing amount of work ethic. They press us all game on all parts of the field, and those type of games we normally struggle, like against Sheffield United, same type of style. I would say we normally don't play that well. You know, we have players like like Barkley who doesn't perform under pressure. I was worried before the game, and as Pascal said, if we were to win this game, it had to be an awesome performance. In my mind, I think 0-0 is fine. After, seeing the game, it was, we couldn't ask for more than that. Brighton should have won that game. Easy. If you look at the numbers, we were like killed, actually. It was like 26 to 2 or something, and, chances. That tells everything. They, just outnumbered us all over the field. They outworked us. As I said, typically, Brighton is the type of team that we normally struggle against, in my opinion.
Absolutely. And James, you weren't even here last week. I know we chatted a little bit heading up to it, but I'd love to kind of get your thoughts, because I think that's the one that, we're just unclear of right now.
I think going into the game, thinking how inconsistent we've been in the last, couple of months. We've gone from win, defeat. I was expecting a defeat just on that pattern, to be honest. I mean, we don't seem to be able to put a run together at the moment. So I was expecting probably a defeat. But in terms of Brighton, I think as the guys have said, they're a great footballing team up until you get to their penalty area. Then they get into the box and they don't really have that potency, which, if they did, as Pascal said, they'd be a top half team, no doubt about that. They've got some lovely footballers, some great defenders, and they've, I think Dunk's incredibly underrated. He should be there or thereabouts for England. White looks a good player as well. And Bissouma, I really like him. You know, if they ever go down, I'd love to pinch him off them. I think he'd be a great player for us. But yeah, it's just up front, they're just not quite there, are they? I mean, if they had that striker who could, you know, consistently get the ball in the net, because they get the ball in good areas, just not really to the striker quick enough, and then they haven't got the striker to pull it away as well. Yeah, going into it, I thought we could get something, but it is a difficult place to go, and I think it's a good barometer of sort of where we're at the moment is, you know, we've come away from there being incredibly disappointed, but really, it's not a bad result, you know, on paper. I think it's just because we've been so good this season, and we are where we are, looking upwards at the moment, thinking, okay, we want to be winning those sorts of games, but equally, going into it, I probably wouldn't say I would take a point, but you know, it's I'd take a point with a better performance. And I think for most Villa fans, whilst we're getting into the game now, I think it's more the performance that's got me down rather than the actual result.
That's an incredible point. I mean, looking at the performance, it was just one of those days, you know, like nothing was really coming off, sloppy with the passing, you know, we couldn't hold on to the ball. I think, you know, we looked leggy in a lot of areas, which I think has been kind of a theme for the last few weeks. So it was definitely a disappointing thing. And one thing that I think a lot of fans earmarked at the start of the game as well, Luis came in for Nakamba, who stepped in last week and, you know, performed really astutely against Arsenal. So Espen, I'll start with you. Just looking at the lineup when it came out, were you expecting more changes, especially given how, I'd say, tired, you know, folks like Barkley and McGinn have looked? Were you surprised Luis came straight back in after the week off? You know, give us your thoughts when you were heading into the game.
No, I wasn't. The team that was playing was the team I thought who were playing. I felt Luis coming back in. I don't think Nakamba had been doing any better than Luis in this particular game. Personal view is that Barkley should have been dropped because he's not performing at all. He needs a break. Well, he needs to feel that he's not being picked every week. Sanson, he did a fine job, and I think he will be a better player in our system. He works harder, he runs more. I think we need that kind of player in that spot because our system needs that, in my mind. We play our best football when we have a high pressure with a lot of players pressing high, and that's why I think Barkley is not the type of attacking midfielder in our system. And he hasn't been performing. He's not producing. He's got problems when under pressure. In my personal opinion, I would leave Barkley out for Sands. I was not surprised because he usually sticks to his favorite 11, which is the team he's playing right now.
Yeah, I completely agree with everything you just said. I'm not surprised at the lineup either. You know, it seems like this is, in my opinion, on paper anyway, we can get into the performances later on. This is our strongest 11. Obviously, I completely agree. Barkley hasn't really been performing well since he came back from his injury. Hasn't been the same player, in my opinion. When we first got him, like those games against Liverpool and Arsenal, you know, I was looking straight away. We need to sign this guy straight away. And then since his injury, you know, he started coming back from fitness. Okay, he got the goal against Southampton, but he hasn't really been performing well. And as you said, Sanson, he was only on the pitch for 15 minutes, you know, and the energy he brought to the team straight away. It was, you know, it was unlucky not to get on the end of one chance that Grealish made for him as well. I think you're right. I think Barkley does need to be dropped, you know, to show that he's not invincible. I also would put McGinn in that category as well, because I think he's looked a little bit leggy lately and a little bit tired.
Yeah.
And a little bit sloppy in general as well. But I go back to something that James said about the inconsistency. It's loss, win, loss, win, loss, win. I think that maybe we're still suffering from the effects of that COVID outbreak, because it's been since then, the first games when we lost to Man City, then we beat Newcastle and so on and so forth. So I don't know if that's, you know, had like long lasting effects on the squad or something like that. So it'd be interesting to hear your thoughts on that, James.
Yeah, I was going to say the same. It's since the COVID outbreak, isn't it? We don't know exactly who had COVID or you know, if there's still lasting effects from it. But since then, the team doesn't look quite the same. And whilst we picked up a couple of decent results in that period, you know, we're quite fortunate against Southampton. Whilst we got the 3 points, we were pretty fortunate. I think we can all say that. Arsenal, we did well from what I saw. I didn't watch the whole game, but we did well. And, you know, we hung on really well. But then there's other games where we've been completely outplayed, and this was one of them. You know, we're very fortunate not to lose against Brighton. So for me, it is a fitness thing, but also it feels like a fitness thing, but they do have the stats on them, don't they? And Dino keeps on saying that they're all still up there on the stats. So maybe it isn't a fitness thing, but for me, there just seemed McGinn especially and Barkley, that they're both underperforming at the moment. With McGinn, he's passing on Saturday wasn't good enough. You know, he lost the ball an awful lot, and that's not him. It felt to me he was a little bit playing a bit deeper than normally does. That must have been a tactical decision. As for Barkley, the games are passing him by. You know, he'll get involved occasionally, and you know, he might have a shot or he might get in the box on the end of something. But then you don't see him for, you know, most of the time he's on, and you think, well, you know, if you're in that position, you've got to be pressing. That's the way we succeed as a team, is, you know, win the ball high up the field, get it out to Jack. But sometimes I feel like he gets in the way. He gets in the way of the way we want to play. I'm not sure he's the right fit for us, really. But I do appreciate the goals he scored for us. And obviously his performance against Liverpool was incredible. So I'm still very much on the fence with Barkley. But I agree. I think now's the time to say, you've got to come out of the team and let someone else have a go. And Sanson, when he came on, he gave us a different impetus, didn't he? You know, he had that freshness and he wasn't quite so still. You know, he picked the ball up on the halfway line. He moved around the edge of the box. He got in the box. He nearly got on the end of one. You know, I was really, really impressed with that little cameo. So I think he needs a game next. And I think Nakamba's been really hard done by, really. You know, he's been in the team for two wins and that can't be a coincidence. You know, he must be doing something right. I feel he's hard done by. Whether or not it's a game for him, maybe not, because they're not like the strongest team in midfield in terms of, you know, tough tacklers. But they do have a lot of the ball, so he, you know, might have won it back a few more times for us. And just on his performances alone previously, maybe he deserved it as well. So, yeah, feel sorry for Nakambe. Obviously, he's not a, you know, a first choice at the moment, which is understandable given the way the rest of the team's performed this season. But yeah, again, going back, I suppose it's not the result. I don't want to just repeat, but it's not the result I'm necessarily disappointed with. It's just the way we've performed, and we just haven't performed up to knowing how we can. And in truth, we haven't since the COVID outbreak. So, Eddie, I don't know. Do you think the same? Do you think it's because of the COVID, perhaps?
I definitely think it's a factor. You know, I think everyone's kind of touched on it. I think no one's really been off to the races. Even Jack, you know, Jack has not necessarily been at the levels he's always holding himself to. You know, I think he's had flashes. I think he's played really well in certain points of certain games, but overall I think the entire team is just ebbing and flowing in a way that, you know, you expect sometimes out of like a mid-table side, but like it's not something we were necessarily seeing as much of. And maybe that's just down to where we're really at and it's more of a litmus test, or maybe it's down to, you know, folks are feeling the effects of this like lingering illness that, you know, has done similar things to other sides in this the league. So it's hard to say. And I think, you know, everyone's point, especially Aspen's, in terms of just like these folks have not been good enough, especially thinking about McGinn and Barkley, you know, it's spot on. I think they have really kind of been the two that you point to the most. I think Barkley especially, you know, he slows the game down in a way when he gets the ball. You know, he's always like kind of looking to hold it up and assess his options, which I think works in a bit more of a luxury side, especially, you know, when you have a little bit more of the ball, when you're kind of dominating. But I think the way we've looked in the last few weeks, you know, it's a little bit more up and down. It's a really, really hard role to play. And yeah, I just want to pose a question to the group. We can kind of, you know, make this a little bit more free fall, because I don't want to spend too much time in this game because it really was one-way traffic. There wasn't a ton to talk about outside of, you know, Emi Martinez, and I want to get on the Matty Cash thing for a second a little bit, but do you think it was more just like personnel to a man or tactics? Because I've seen a little bit of both. You know, Dean Smith plays a Dean Smith way. Brighton has, you know, what I'd say is like the exact opposite. The manager, Graham Potter, always changes things up. You never really know what he's going to deploy, you know, not necessarily like Hasenhüttl, but like he's not afraid to change things up and play a different way and utilize his whole squad, even though I'd say they're a lot thinner than we are. So, you know, anyone can jump in, but, you know, do you think that was more man to man, or do you think that's more, you know, how we set up?
I would say, well, we have come to a point now where we have a little bit of depth. We now have to get to a place where we, if you don't perform, you're not playing, you know. Nakamba has shown, you know, a couple of games now that he's really there. We can use him whenever we need to. Sanson, he looks like a really fine player. So when players don't perform, they're being dropped. We couldn't do that a while back because we didn't have players that could perform on the same level that the players starting, you know. That's the first thing. We have to use our squad more, better, not, you know, depend on the starting 11 that Smith usually does. And about tactics, yes, I think it's a tactical thing, because I think teams, they're starting to figure out how we play. We start, at least we try to play our way out from Martinez, and I think we're doing a fine job doing that, much better than we have ever done before, in my opinion, because Martinez, he's extremely good with his legs. He can pass the ball, he can think, he can be creative, and he even has that long ball out to the wings, which is doing quite well. But I have seen the last couple of games that we are struggling to figure out how to play our way out of defense. You know, normally it ends up with Mings, you know, doing the long ball up to Watkins, which we did fine earlier in the season because we had more options. We could play through middle. We could play out on the through Cash and targets. But now it's a lot of, you know, long balls from Mings because we can't figure out how to play through the middle, and it ends up in nothing because Mings, he doesn't find Watkins, or he just clears the ball because he's under pressure. So I think we have to find a way to use our midfield more when we play the ball out, and I think we have to work there on those you know, fields on our game.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it's a tactical issue on Saturday. Really, we didn't really change anything at any point. Even the substitutions wasn't a change. It was just same again. Apart from Sanson, because I think he changed it himself rather than necessarily being a tactical change. He has a different attitude to Barkley. For me, you've got to have a sort of plan B, or at least something that's not going to be expected by the opposition. A way to get the ball out to the key players quicker, perhaps. You know, how can we get the Jack into the right area to do the damage, you know, rather than getting 10 passes to get there? How can we do it in two or three passes instead? That's the top teams can do. Our best footballer, to be honest, was probably Martinez on Saturday. He's not only was he exceptional with his gloves, I thought he was great with his feet as well. He was our best player. But other than that, we just struggled to get the ball into the key areas where we're going to do damage. So you've got to think, are we playing far enough at the pitch? I think I said earlier, McGinn, for me, and Luis were just a bit too deep. You know, Brighton have also got a couple of attacking midfielders, and they're playing with a striker. They're not the most potent players. So I think just push them up, make them play on the halfway line, so put our game onto them rather than, you know, rather than coping with what they've got. So it was just for me, again, we've said before about being more proactive rather than reactive. And we weren't either one on Saturday. Even the changes didn't really change the way we played. But for me, we should have imposed our game better, use our strengths better, get our best players in the positions quicker to do the damage. Unfortunately, the likes of Jack, Watkins, Traore, none of them really had the sorts of games we know they can, but I wouldn't necessarily say that any of them played particularly badly. I'd just say that the ball wasn't given to them quick enough where they can do the damage in the space that they need. So what did you think, Pascal?
Yeah, I just thought it was just a bit of an off day all round for for everyone really, but especially like the forward players. We're noticing a pattern now in the season where, as you said, teams have a game plan for Grealish because he's obviously our most effective player. The issue is, as you said, James, we're not doing anything about it. West Ham did the same thing where they had Soufal literally running around him. I'm surprised he wasn't with Jack in the changing rooms after the game. He was following so closely. And then they, you know, and then Brighton had a similar kind of game plan with Veltman. Veltman was just all over him for the whole game. You know, and we do nothing to adjust it. As soon as the West Ham game, as I said, as soon as we moved Jack to the right, we created two chances and we scored from one of those chances. Do you know what I mean? So there needs to be a bit more flexibility within the front line when it's not working. Just change over for 10 minutes, see what kind of damage you can cause and stuff. And, you know, maybe we can get a chance or even a goal. It's what we said weeks ago about sometimes we feel Dean Smith has a big lack of plan B because all the subs are just like pre-planned almost. You know, it's going to be one of the wingers and you know, it's going to be Barkley bought off. Obviously, okay, Cash got an injury. So he came off El Mohammedi, but you know, I can't remember the last time we bought Keenan Davis on or something like that, except when we're like 2 or 3 nil down. Keenan Davis might have been a good shout just to switch it up and go 4-4-2 because I think, you know, Lewis Dunk just had Watkins in his pocket, to be honest with you. Nothing was sticking for him. And I think a little bit of physicality might have caused more issues on the day.
The other thing, chaps, is just thinking out loud here. We were saying that Grealish is getting doubled up on or man marks every game. Surely that leaves space to another player to have the space. So that's where you think Barkley needs to step up. He should have more space afforded to him because a man's been taken away. You know that man's always going to be on Grealish. So for me, the sort of money and the class that Barkley's got in his locker, you think, well, surely you should be making the most of this this opportunity to have the extra space and do some damage, which you know you can do.
Yeah, and I think kind of going back to what I said, I think that's where what he's been trying to do on the ball has been such an issue. Like he gets it and slows things down, like he says. I am sure there's a tactical portion to this, but like where we've been overloading the left side when Jack's out there. So even if he's getting doubled up, there's not a ton of space, especially when Barkley shifts out or, you know, Watkins shifts out. So, you know, he has that free flowing role that Jack almost played for us in the championship when he was playing centrally, you know, kind of getting around the front three and being able to play behind the striker, but like kind of having that license. But it always seems he's trying to receive the ball pretty close to Jack and then just, you know,
Jack was double teamed all game. Yeah. And that means there must be, you know, more room, you know, spots on the field. We should take advantage of that. It should be quite easy. Okay. Jack has been, well, there's two guys on him. That means more space, you know, other places.
Yeah. And he's just not, you know, it's not even just Barkley. You know, I think McGinn, like you said, I think it was James, hasn't been getting forward and supporting attack as much. I just don't think we, as a team, have figured out how to quite cope with them trying to get the ball off of Jack quite as much, like letting other people beat them rather than just like Grealish creating for the rest of them. So yeah, it's been interesting and not necessarily the most fun to watch the last few weeks, but at least we've gotten some few results and James said it perfectly. Draw is better than a loss, even if we're disappointed with the performance. I just want to quickly talk about the last event of the game before we move on, since I mean, I don't think we have to do too many men of the match. I think, are we all in accordance? Martinez won the man of the match award. I think that's fair.
Yeah, he just won this season.
He just gets it for the year. But the one thing I do want to talk about a little bit is Matty Cash pulling up with what appeared to be a hamstring injury. There hasn't been a ton of news out of the camp. Freddie Gilbert, who we have a lot of time for on this show, has moved off to Strasbourg and has made a pretty quick impact over there. So we are left with El Mohammedi. And then if you really want to like go down the order a little bit, Kane Kessler-Hayden, who's playing for the under-23 side, who has looked good. But again, I don't think he's necessarily first team ready at this point. So yeah. What do you guys think about the prospect of not being without Cash, at least for maybe a week? You know, hamstring injuries are so tricky. You never know the severity of it. And it hasn't really been aired out to us yet. Pascal?
I'm scared. I'm not going to lie. You know, Matty Cash, what he brings is like such a high energy. His work rate, his tackling's good. He's just he's an athlete. He's more of an athlete than most of the other players. I haven't seen the stats, but in terms of running, he's probably like at the top of the list. And I'm worried, you know, I'm not going to lie, I'm worried. It's going to be a big issue for our team, I think. Hopefully I'm wrong, but, you know, I trust Elmo to play like some games where there's 3 games in a week? I think he's like 33, 34, something like that. Actually, no, he's not. He's like the same age as me, which is crazy. No, he's like a year older than me or something, which makes me feel like incredibly old. But the other thing I would probably do is maybe move Konsa right back, maybe bring Engels back in. But obviously Engels hasn't played. that's also a risk. Hopefully, you know, these hamstring injuries, you never know. Sometimes they're a week or two, or sometimes they're like a month. So let's just hope that it's not like, I think it depends on the grade or whatever. Hopefully it's not like a bad injury, and hopefully he can come back in like a week or two.
Yeah, let's hope his hamstrings are better than Barclays, because Barclays seemed to go on forever, didn't it? You know, getting back. Cash has been an unbelievable signing for us, hasn't he? We've said it so many times. He's really stepped up, and he, like you say, he's an athlete. We seem to have so many great right backs in England at the moment, English right backs, and you know, he's right up there. He's been a revelation for us, really. I didn't expect him to be quite that good, especially because he hasn't been a right back for that long, only a year or two. Big loss for us, and Elmo is just not the same player. I like Elmo; he's great. You know, obviously the players seem to love him, but you know, he's not going to offer us the same dimension that Cash is. So it's a worry. You don't know about Kane. You know, Kane Hessler might be ready. Who knows? You know, because Elmo's contract's up in the summer, and I'd be surprised if he gets another term. He might do, but I'd be surprised if he does. So I think he would have been given it by now. If Kane was to move up, you wonder, would he be number two right back for next season? It's perhaps a chance. He must be training with the first team squad, whether he's ready or not. Probably not. It might be a bit much. I'm not a big fan of the idea of moving Konsa to right back. I know he did quite well there last season, and you know, we probably needed it at that point. But with where we are now, I'd rather not play around too much with the defence, because we've, you know, we've been so good. Konsa was in the best three or four players at the weekend, and there was only four who showed up. I thought he was it amongst them, and he has been consistent all season. And you know, for me, he's knocking on the door for England now. So I wouldn't want to move him. I think he's getting better and better every week, and he's got a solid partnership with Mings. So it's disappointing, but fingers crossed it's not going to be for too long. But we just don't know, do we?
I think Elmo will be fine. It's scary, yes, but as long as we can plug the hole between right back Konsa, which is key to our defending, Traore has done quite well lately in doing that, because we play, we're in narrow, our back four start out narrow, you know, when we lose the ball and let the wingers get space before we, you know, close them out, close them down. As long as we plug the hole between right back and Konsa, I think we'll be fine. But Elmo might be re-signed, I think, until Kessler is ready, because I believe Kessler is a huge talent. He's like one of the, you know, the best right backs in England at the moment, under 20. And I believe he will be ready within 2 years. Maybe not from August already, but he's physically quite far as well. And he has, you know, offensive talents more than Cash, in my mind. I think Kessler really can be something else, actually. So Elmo might be re-signed to, you know, plug the hole until he's ready.
I mean, absolutely. And I think one of the things I take a little bit of respite from, if you will, is that, you know, if Elmo does come in and we are sort of trying to shore up that side, you know, I think that would be a nice introduction for Trezeguet to come back into the side as well. You know, his international teammate, he plays on the same side. I think that would actually make a lot of sense. But I think that's actually a perfect segue into just talking about the Leicester game coming up next Sunday. So, you know, Leicester City coming off a really good result this weekend, dismantling what I would say looks like a disjointed Liverpool side that just have not looked up to it in the last 2 weeks. Thoughts go out to, of course, Jurgen Klopp for, you know, the loss of his mother. I'm sure that's not been easy to deal with at the office, but, you know, they've been a right mess, top to bottom, lots of injuries. But this isn't the Liverpool show. This is, you know, the preview for Leicester, and they've done what they had to do in terms of the teams in front of them. They played really well there. I think Barnes, Madison have come onto form. Vardy's back fit and Didi's back fit, all people who, you know, they've been without. And I think some of that sputtering form they had over December and January is really starting to fade a little bit, and they're starting to look really dangerous. So I just wanted to really quickly say, you know, see what you guys have thought of Leicester so far this season. I'm not sure how much you've watched of them, but overall, you know, at least for me, they're a team that we did a job on early on in the season, but especially if we're not fully at it, I think it's a team that could, you know, really give it to us, especially with how quick they play. So open forum here.
Well, Leicester is, in my mind, they have the formula that I believe we are in the beginning of. By they have over like 5 years now, you know, bought the right players to a system that they now, you know, do amazingly. All the players they buy, they work in the system they play. And as we can see, you know, the new players we have bought in now, they work perfectly in the system Smith wants to play. While Lange has been brought in because he has shown he's extremely good at, you know, finding the right kind of players that a scouting system wants, you know, that and we're starting to see that. Yeah, I think Sanson is a player that is brought in because he fits the system that we play. And going back to Leicester, it's going to be tough. I think they play in Europe on Thursday. That might, you know, be something that we can take advantage of. Hopefully they have 6-7 injuries in Europe. We just have to do what they do best. We have to, you know, play on their strengths. We have to play a good defensive, you know, structure and counter them as and let them, you know, have the ball and you know, just, you know, work them down. I think that's the way we could, you know, get a result, playing on their strengths.
Yeah, Leicester are top side. They deserve proper respect this season. They've had some incredible results. And like you say, Espen, they're a bit of a benchmark for us, I think. You know, if we've got any aspirations of breaking that top four in the coming years, which of course we have, we need to use them as a blueprint because they've signed some great players that fit their system. They've got a good manager. You know, he's really done well there. He's found a club that fits him quite well. We got a result early in the season, which we didn't necessarily deserve, but they didn't deserve to beat us either. But I'm expecting this time around that now they're in form, that they're going to have a much tougher test. I've been to games at Villa Park against Leicester and they played us off the pitch, and I'm hoping it won't be the case, but I can see them being a different beast to last time we played against them. So I'm a little bit more worried this time. Obviously, high in confidence. They're chasing the top four. We can't really compare the Liverpool result, though, because, you know, we beat Liverpool 7-2. So, you know, anyone can beat Liverpool. That's not difficult. But, no, joking aside, I mean, they're a good team. And I like the attacking midfielders. And Vardy, whilst he can be an absolute pain in the ass, I wouldn't want to play against him. He's the sort of player I'd love in a side. You know, I think his work rate is phenomenal, and I think he's the sort of player that Watkins bases his game on, because he just never doesn't stop running, and also he's just ready for that opportunity that comes his way, and he more often than not he takes them. So I'm a little bit worried because I think they've got their hunger this season to do something. They're probably going to be a bit far off the title because Man City look incredible, but they look probably the second best at the moment.
They're second in the league for a reason. They've lost one away game all season, which is at Anfield. So, yeah, the omens aren't really in our favour in this one. It's going to, in my opinion, now that Vardy's back as well, and they're pretty much, apart from the right back, they've pretty much got their full team out. This is going to be a difficult, very, very difficult test for us. Personally, I'm not really looking forward to it, but, you know, the one weakness I can see in their side is the fact that they're playing a defensive midfielder at right back. So hopefully that's got Jack Grealish written all over it in terms of like exploiting that. Same as when they had Ward-Prowse in that position, we managed to exploit that to some success as well. So yeah, they're a top side. We nicked Craig Shakespeare from him, which I think is one of the best moves we did in the summer as well, because he's kind of got that philosophy already, having managed them and been there for so long. They've got Jamie Vardy, who I think's probably, after Kane and Aguero, the best striker in the league. And they've got Harvey Barnes, incredible player. James Maddison, who's good friends with Grealish and plays like Grealish as well. So it's a very tough game. Very, very tough game. We have to be more than our best to get anything out of them, in my opinion. So let's see what happens.
No, I mean, absolutely. And, you know, you look at that side, they play a lot of different ways really well. You know, if they they want to sit back and get you on the break. They're pacey all over the pitch. If they, you know, want to hold on to the ball, I think Ndidi, Tielemans, and Madison are really tidy and, you know, do a good job with the ball. You know, they have some folks who are going to stop Route 1 football. You know, Evans, he's not the fastest, but, you know, he'll just head everything away, and he's just very, very composed. So, yeah, they top to bottom, it's a tough one, and you just look up and down. But, no, thinking about that, what – if anyways, I mean, Pascal has talked a little bit about Justin being out and him having to shift around at the back a little bit. Are there any ways that you guys kind of look at this Leicester team and think to yourself, like, that's what we have to do to make this work?
Pressure the center backs. And then we need someone else than Barkley to back up Watkins when we pressure. Because it have to be... We can't pressure them only with Watkins. We have to, you know, a lot of players have to do it. You know, one start the pressure, then the next come, you know, blah blah blah. You know, you get it.
Yeah.
What's that called? That word.
Like waves of pressure.
Yeah.
But when you press as a team, yeah, I think in
Germany, as a team,
the Gegen press or whatever it's called. Mm-hmm. That's how they. I would start Trez. I know it sounds controversial because Trez has been doing so well. It needs to be a high energy performance. I thought Trezeguet did brilliantly when we played him at the King Power as well. We need work rate in this one because we need players who track forward and track back because they have some extreme pace on the counter attack.
So, yeah, Evans is not very comfortable on the ball.
True.
So if we pressure, you know, there's CB's hard. I think that could be key to you know, break them down.
I'd say Soyuncu's the weaker link. Evans, yes, he might not like pressure, but he is still one of the best centre backs in the league.
Yeah, of course.
Soyuncu, very good player, but has a rash moment in him as well. So he's the kind of player, if you rile him up, you can get him sent off. It's a tough ask in my opinion. Vardy, as you said, James, is that kind of player that is like Morpay. You hate him, but you know you'd love him in your team. Mm-hmm. And when he's on form, like I can't believe he's like 34, 35 and still one of the fastest players in the league as well. So yeah, it'll be Konsa and Mings will definitely have to have their A game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree with what you guys have said in terms of you know, pressing high. The only other thing really is just to stop the supply line, isn't it? So he stopped the supply to Vardy. We probably need to do a similar job on Madison to what teams do on Grealish to us, because clearly it works. I know that leaves Barnes out, but for me, Madison's the slightly more dangerous one. He's the one who seems to start the moves off. Barnes gets into good space. So if you can stop the supply to Barnes and Vardy, you've probably got a chance. But yeah, it's going to be a really, really tough one. I like the idea of Trezeguet coming in. You know, He was unlucky to lose his place, ultimately, wasn't he? Yeah, he had a great start to the season. Then he obviously had his injury. And Drew always come in and done so well. But yeah, I like the idea of bringing him in. I also like the idea of having the camber back in as well. You know, this isn't a camber game for me. And why not? While we're at it, let's bring Sanderson in. Let's give him a try in that number 10 role. So that's three changes to midfield. But I think it's justified. It'd be interesting to see if Dino goes along with it or not.
Let's do it.
Yeah, and I'm thinking the Trezeguet thing as well, especially if El Mahamedy is going to start on the same side that Harvey Barnes is going to play, who's been in, you know, phenomenal form. He's got blistering pace. I think that's like a necessary change. You know, I love Traore. I think he does a lot of good things. But for a game that, you know, you're going to be under it for a little bit, I think it just makes sense. So, yeah, quickly, you know, I know we're kind of throwing a few different things out here. I just want to get all of your thoughts on lineups. I want to go score predictions, and if you're so bold as well, goal scorers. So I'll start with the guess. Aspen, what are you thinking?
I'm optimistic, you know, always been. 1-1, and I think Konsa scores.
And changes to the lineup?
Yeah, we'll talked about it. I think Trez should get in. Nakamba and Sanson. I actually believe that's the best way to the best lineup to field against Leicester this upcoming Sunday.
I think there's two things here, isn't there? It's just what I want to happen, what I think will happen, and what I once happened, I've already said. I can't see that Smith making that many changes, in truth. I would not be surprised at all just to see that Elmo's the only change. I would not be surprised.
Me neither.
No, the thing is, though, they have got a week of training, haven't they? So we've got a week to get it right, a week to build your match fitness up, your fitness up as well. So I wouldn't be surprised. Smith's going to pick the team he thinks is best, most capable of getting the 3 points, isn't he? It's not his interest to do anything different, but I would like to see Trezeguet out there. In terms of result, I think Leicester need to get revenge on us. I think they'll be all out to do that. I'll go for a 2-1 defeat, unfortunately, on this one. Let's have Jack to get a goal.
I agree. I think he'll only change Elmo and leave the rest of the team as it was. That's what I think he'll do. What I'd like to do is Elmo, Trezeguet and Sanson in for Barkley, Traore and El Mohamedy. Whether he does that or not, we'll find out on Sunday. I guess. In terms of the score prediction, I want us to have a narrow 1-0 win, but I can't see them not scoring. They're the second, after Man United, they're the best away team in the league. They've only lost one away game all season. If I had to put a result down on paper, I think we'll lose 2-0. If I had to write on paper, but you know, my heart says it would be like a very narrow 1-0.
I like your heart better than your head there. If I'm going to be thinking about it, I do think it's a kind of game that like suits Nakamba, just given how much of the ball they're probably going to have on the break, especially. That's how they always like to play against us. So I think Nakamba comes in. I think Luiz stays in. I think Sanson comes in for Barkley. And they play like two sitters and Sanson kind of buzzing around the top. Do I actually think he'll do that? No. But that'd be great. I think Traore deserves to, he doesn't deserve to sit, but I think it's a game for Trezeguet. I think it makes so much sense. And he came up at the back post with an El Hamidi cross. Thinking back last year to the FA Cup, not the FA Cup, the League Cup semi. So, yeah, I'd love to see more of that. But to be honest, I'm probably going to go for I'd love a draw. I think a draw right now would be phenomenal. You know, not great in terms of the confidence and all that good stuff, but I think a 1-1 would be great. And yeah, I don't know. I think for some reason, I think Ollie's going to get on the end of something. I think I always predict that, and whenever it's right, I feel really good about it. So I think Ollie will get on the end of something. And I think Madison's going to bag against us. You know, I think he always comes to play against us, and especially with all the debate, especially with the Euros coming up with Jack playing alongside of him, or across from him, rather. I think he's got a point to prove. So yeah, that does it for predictions and everything.
And another thing, Barkley has been he's been criticized heavy this week. And it's kind of a Smith thing to support him and play him next week. That's my feeling. His type of thing to do.
Oh, you're 100% right. Although I do think, you know, especially with all the criticism he's come under, and you guys kind of comment on this, like, I think he'd actually benefit from like a cameo appearance, like sitting a little bit, seeing the game, seeing what's absolutely a little bit more required, and, you know, a little bit of that fire under the ass of like, hey, like, my spot's not guaranteed, even though I'm Ross Barkley, I cost a lot, I play at Chelsea, blah, blah, blah. Like, I think that would actually be like a nice little incentive for him to get his performances up. But yeah, we'll see. So again, that does it for a little bit of our Villa talk now, but Espen, again, thank you for joining us. We're so excited, and now I think it's the perfect time to transition to our Global Villain section. So Espen, coming all the way from Norway, right outside of Oslo, I think the question everyone wants to ask, especially because you are such a fixture of, you know, the Villa social media space, you know, you're always on Twitter. I think you're very recognizable there. So just tell us a little bit, you know, how did you get to this spot? You know, how did you come to start supporting Aston Villa?
Well, it was actually my best friend Kenneth who supported Villa from when he was a kid. I don't know why he turned out to be a Villa fan, but I became a Villa fan because he did. Because he was the coolest kid in the street, you know. And of course, they have amazing shirts, you know. Amazing colors, and it just became my club. You know, as I have heard, other Norwegians tell from this show. There's always been a great deal of a big fan base of English football in Norway. We had like something called Tippekampen, which was the 4 o'clock game on TV from the 70s. It's been like, you know, every year from then we had, you know, that one game, Tippekampen. That's that means bet game. We had like a bet sheet where we had to bet on 12 games in English football every Saturday, and from then on it was called Tippekampen, which is the bet game, you know. And there's always been a lot of Leeds fans, United fans, Liverpool fans, Tottenham fans, Man United, you know, in England, in Norway. But I'm not following, you know, like everyone else. I needed to have my own team, and then it became Aston Villa. And that's, you know, the start of it. And from then on, I have supported Villa in thick and thin, and it's been a struggle, to be honest. It's it's not been easy, as you all know. It's hard being a Villa fan, but lately it's become quite fun because things are actually happening now. We have owners that really wants us to succeed, and we are building something beautiful here, and it's fun and a good feeling to be a part of, you know, as a fan. And my Twitter thing, you know, I started that thing with the lion that's full of each other thing, you know. I started that, you know, a couple of years ago, and it was, you know, people did follow, and they added, you know, the lion on their Twitter name, and you know, and that was quite fun. And since then, I have you know, been more recognizable on Twitter. I like to share my thoughts, my feelings, as I think everyone should, you know, as long as you don't harass anyone, you know, share what you think and what your feelings are. And I like to be honest. I tell what I feel, and it's sometimes it's quite, you know, you get some tough times from fans, you know, hardcore Villa fans who think I'm too harsh on our players. You know, like, I've been quite hard on Hurrihane, for instance, and a lot of people, you know, are coming hard at me and saying, "Oh, you have to support our players, blah blah blah." Yeah. But I feel that the arrow is going up quite fast, and I think we have to think that way as well. We have to, you know, we have to be ambitious as fans as well. Hurrihane, he's not good enough, in my opinion, and I say that on Twitter and to friends and everyone. Barkley, he's not good enough. Simple as that. He doesn't fit our system. So I write that on Twitter. And I don't care what other people thinks. Reality bites. That's just the way it is. We need, and I believe that when the summer comes, we have better options than Barkley. Not just because I don't think he's good enough, but I don't think he fits the system either, because we need more athletic attacking midfielders. We need more pace, and I believe that there's tons of players out in Europe and also in England that will be interesting in joining Villa, because it's not just we that see our club going upward. Everyone else does too, and we know we have a lot of money. It doesn't matter. It doesn't mean that we're going to use some. We're not necessarily going to, you know, buy players for 150 million in the summer. But we're going to use money when we need it. And I think we slowly will build on what we already have, and then we have to, you know, replace our worst players with better ones. And I actually believe that's going to happen. Maybe we buy three more players in the summer. Okay, then three have to go. If Hurrián is not good enough, he has to go. If Barkley have showed us that he's not good enough to play for Aston Villa, then we don't buy him. We buy someone else that will fit the bill better than... Sansom is probably a better player than Barkley, in my opinion. He's had one whole year now to show us that he can not only fight for England, which he probably wants, but also to be bought in the summer. And I don't think that will happen. I think we will buy another attacking midfielder, but I don't think it's going to be Barkley.
Yeah, you're making some great points, Espen. Just thinking back to yourself, I mean, I think you mentioned pre-pod that you've been a Villa fan for a long time. Talk us through sort of when you discovered Villa and what you do to how you watch Villa nowadays. And do you actually make it to Villa Park at all?
No, I haven't. I'm planning to organize a trip when the pandemic is over with some other Norwegian fans. I have something planned already, and I will reach out to other Norwegian Villa fans, and we're going to have an amazing trip to England, hopefully in August, September, you know, as soon as possible. And then we're going to meet up, maybe. Well, whoever you are in, Pascal, you're in... Pascal, are you in Britain? No.
Yeah, I actually live in Dubai, although I'm from Birmingham.
Yeah, you're in Dubai, James. Yeah. You're in.
I'm in Birmingham. Yeah, season ticket holder. Yeah.
Well, we're gonna meet up then.
That sounds good. Look forward to that.
Yeah, we'll definitely plan a podcast meetup at a game sometime. We'll try and get Eddie.
That'd be awesome. That'd be amazing.
Yeah, because it's some experience seeing Villa Park in the flesh, you know, the full stadium. And then 5 minutes later, we're 1-0 down. Do you know what I mean? But it's a good atmosphere, and it is rocking, especially when, you know, when it's going well for us.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you more about like the kind of social media stuff you were mentioning. You know, obviously you stick to your guns with your opinions. And, you know, lately in like the kind of social media community, abuse has been highlighted quite a lot. Is that something that, you know, do people say like negative things to you? And like, how has that kind of affected, you know, the way you tweet? Because I've just had a read of your Twitter page, and it is very like opinionated, and I respect that, you know, that's your opinion. Do you know what I mean? But I can see why certain sections of the Villa faithful would disagree with certain things that you have to say.
Yeah. And why should I not mean stuff when I actually do? I don't care if someone is not having the same meanings that I do. That's the whole point of Twitter, you know, sharing thoughts. Yeah, people harass, but I then tell them it's wrong, of course. About myself, being, you know, if not harassed, but people saying, you know, stupid things and telling me to shut up, you know, that doesn't bother me a great deal. As you can see, I continue to, you know, mean stuff, you know. I think the community should support, stick up to people who is being harassed more than they do.
Absolutely. So, you know, to bring us to a little bit of a, you know, a lighter note, you know, you did mention you are planning this trip with, you know, a lot of the other Norwegian groups. And I know there's, you know, quite a few. We spoke to folks from the Arctic Lions. I know there's the sort of more, the bigger Norwegian Lion Club. Yeah. And you mentioned, you know, you're outside of Oslo in a smaller town. So I'm wondering, you know, who do you end up like spending match days with? And I'd say more regular times, and we're allowed to all hang out a little bit more. So like, do you have a group of friends in the area who are also Villa fans, including, you know, the folks you mentioned before? Do you get together with some of the larger groups? And even on that note, you know, what has been your sort of best Villa moment? Like, were you with other folks? Like, were you at home? Like, what was your sort of like the highlight of your fan career as a Villa fan?
Well, I have my little man cave here. Normally, I watch the games by myself, but sometimes I go to pubs, you know, around. I think maybe here in Norway, we can watch more games than any other countries in the world. We have an extreme football. Well, I can watch about 15 live games every night from my little man cave here in Norway, from, you know, Germany, France, Spain, Italy. We have all the leagues, and we can watch all the games from all over Europe. So I should be a scout for Villa, actually, someone should actually, you know, hire me to do some work for Villa.
We'll get Lange on the phone after this.
Mostly I watch the games myself. If not, we watch the games at each other's house or go to a pub. But it's mostly Kenneth and one other friend. There's not a lot of Villa fans around here, so. Normally, those are the closest ones that I watch the games with, yes.
And best memories just like from your time as a fan, and we'll kind of end it there.
Is there a lot of good memories, actually? Well, the best memories are, of course, the promotion a couple of years ago. That was amazing. I saw the game in Kenneth's house. And that was an extreme emotional day. We were crying like kids when you know, the final whistle blew. That was an awesome experience. And of course, the rescue against West Ham, you know, was of course something else. It was like, you know, the feeling like you won the league, you know. Other than that, I don't have a particular game that was, you know, a highlight. But the most recent ones, of course, are those two games.
Yeah, and I mean, if you want to look back at recent history, those are two pretty good ones, and I think could be on top of a lot of people's lists. Yeah. But yeah, I think that does it for us. Espen, thank you so much for joining us, especially today on our 20th episode. Really appreciate it. It's always good to have, you know, someone who's so active in this community. And I think, you know, the points you make about creating that community and, you know, making it a safe space for folks to come on and decompress, especially when we're all stuck inside, I think it's just such an important one to make. So we really appreciate you coming on, chatting Villa with us a little bit. It's always good to, you know, chat with fans from around the world. And hopefully we make that live episode at Villa Park happen when we all get to, get outside and get a little air.
But one thing, you know, the tweets where I say that we are a million Villa fans around the world, I don't think it's actually, I think it won't be a, I don't actually think that all, you know, the whole fan base are going to, you know, follow each other. some fans have, you know, said, it's not possible. I tried that before, blah, blah, blah. But at least we can make the community bigger. That's the whole point. I want to build as big a community as possible on Twitter, and then we have to follow each other to make that community, you know, as large as possible. That's my whole point with that, you know, that tweet.
And I'm definitely going to include all of your social media stuff on the episode as well. So, you know, folks, I do think he makes a really good point. You know, what's the more we connect with each other, and that's really the point of this entire show too, you know, connecting with fans from around the world. We just want to make sure that happens because, you know, I think the more united we are as a fan base, the better it's going to be for the club. But yeah, thank you so much, Espen. This is usually the time where we give our guests a little bit of time to plug anything they have going on, they want to share with the folks. Anything you'd like to share?
Said pretty much everything I think. I believe we are in a good place. Really, really good place. And I actually believe something is going to happen now. We're gonna get there. I think that's my last words.
Awesome. And folks, James, Pascal, anything you want to share with the nice people?
No, just as much as we keep on enjoying meeting people from around the world, Villa fans, and you know, especially in these difficult times for us all, not being able to get to Villa Park. It's great to have this little catch up with people. Thank you.
Yeah.
One thing, actually, a few things I want to plug. First and foremost, Pascal is now the proprietor of our YouTube channel, so we're going to be trying to release episodes, you know, as much as we can with a few graphics, or might, you know, get in some additional content as well. But, you know, if your preferred way to digest, if you will, the podcast is via YouTube, you have that option now. And you also can, of course, do the classic, the Anchor, the Spotify, Apple Podcast, things like that. So we hope you keep listening, liking, subscribing, especially to that YouTube channel. It's easier for people to find it if you subscribe. But yeah, thank you so much, Espen. We appreciate all of you guys so much. We're going to post, you know, again and again and again, the donation pages for the Gambia Lions and the Ghana Lions and their Twitter feed, their GoFundMes right now. They're all doing some amazing stuff. We hope you guys get involved. But until then, let's hope we get a result on Leicester, and we're all being, you know, excessively negative. Let's hope the Villa boys prove us wrong. And until then, till next week, up the Villa.
Up the Villa.
Up the Villa.